all this time, Porter, everything you've done, everything you've said, I've heard all about. So you've made some remarks in the past about when is Papa Fritz going to be here. Papa Fritz is here.
With Johnny and Kelly. Kelly, how you doing, my friend?
Doing great. It's great to be live and in Zoom. And we've left Skype behind, so we're on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, we are COVID approved with the Zoom for sure. Johnny, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. And again, yes, we've given in like everyone else, every other podcast on that exists right now, and we're doing the Zoom thing. So if you hear some weirdness, the listeners hear a little weirdness, we're still figuring it out, but it's going to be an improvement.
Yeah, for sure. So on to the show then, man. We're looking at January 28th, 1984 on the WWE Network. And we get the opening match is a encore match of Kamala versus JYD. Do any of you guys really need to go over this match again?
No, I didn't watch it again, so I can't even remember it.
Well, then there we go.
I had no notes.
All right.
Well, see, I didn't even remember. I didn't remember that we watched this.
Yeah,
it's been a while, but yeah, sometime in December, probably.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, then we move over to Mike Von Erich versus Ron Cheatham, and let me tell you guys, Ron Cheatham was fucking awesome in this match. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is totally tongue in cheek, but I would have put a goddamn hood on him and made him Super D number three. I mean, he earned himself a job in this territory forever. How good he made Mike Von Erich and had a compelling match. They easily could have found a slot in him as a mid-level heel because it seemed like he had enough charisma. He had a decent, he had a money drawing look, but definitely a territorial heel look. Kelly, do you have much on this guy?
Yeah, I took my usual notes. You'll have to refresh my memory, though, what he looks like, because I watched this probably about 6 weeks ago. My notes say he had
the gimmick knee brace. And, it wasn't like he had a great look. It was just a generic, territorial heel look, but what he did with Mike was that opening bump he took, fucking A. What do you have on him?
I just don't have a picture of him in my mind at all, what he looked like, but my notes, according to my notes, he was great. He started around 1980. The first recorded match that I could find was July 29th, 1980. That was in Mid-South. And yeah, he was well traveled, but he was pretty much just a job guy, unfortunately. Georgia, Southwest, Carolinas, and he kept going back to Mid-South. So at this point, he had just done jobber stuff, and I'm not sure where his career went after that because I don't have any notes beyond 1984. I don't know. But yeah, he was good in this. And Mike, of course, needs, the best help he can get at this point because he's super green. And they told a story right from the beginning that Mike was concerned with Cheatham's knee brace. And this pissed off Cheatham. So he proceeded to bulldoze Mike to start the match. And then, of course, the knee brace is a weapon. He uses it on Mike. And I have notes here that Cheatham has, a lot of personality, posing to the crowd. And when he was posing, Mike drop kicks him from behind, and he gets tangled in the ropes.
He's really good. was fucking awesome. I mean,
it was.
If you have the network, you need to come watch this match. It's only like 4.5 minutes, and freaking Cheatham takes this bump. That's one of the best bumps. It's such a great underneath card bump. It's fucking awesome.
Okay, it's basically, for the people who haven't seen it, he's standing on the second rope, facing the crowd, taunting the crowd. And he takes the bump over, and he does the whole get my leg caught in the ropes bit, but he does it with both legs, both ankles.
Yeah.
He flips over and twists both ankles into the ropes and lands on his shoulders on the apron. I've never seen anyone do that before. It was amazing.
The skill set on that was off the charts, you know?
Yeah, and my last note is that Mike beat him with a sunset flip coming in from the outside. So, yeah, you guys can fill in the blanks from my description.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this match. I mean, it was actually an actively good match, and it was all because of Ron Cheatham, which is what was like a total heel name. That it felt like Vince Russo came up with it, or WWE developmental.
Wasn't the midget in the videos in WCW in the early 90s?
Yeah.
He was named Cheatham, but I don't think it was spelled the same.
Yeah, right. That was his brother. He has a midget brother. He got him a gig at WCW.
Yeah, it's so terrible. But Cheatham just is a total heel, total scumbag. That foot, you gotta look at this. Get his foot tangled bump was awesome. And Cheatham was just awesome here. He works the crowd, gets him going. He takes probably about 80%, 85% of this match. And it's just a great carry job because Mike, at this point, all he is a name. And his last name is Von Erich, so he's over. But he doesn't have a whole lot of great skill set. He doesn't do anything great. He does a lot of stuff green, actively bad even. He looks really soft.
It's okay.
90% of the audience probably kick his ass. He just is not believable at all in his role, but Cheatham in this carry job was great. And I love that Mike wins on the banana peel finish, sunset flip type of thing. It was tremendous. John, do you have anything you want to add here, brother?
First of all, not only did we get the Kamala JYD encore, after that, we got an encore of them going duck hunting with Bill Mercer. And I just have to mention again how funny it is when Bill's talking to Kevin while they're hiding there in the hutch. And Kevin's like, oh, natural things. Natural things are what I get off on, not disco dancing in the big city. Every time that makes me fucking crack up. Disco dancing in the big city. It's 1983. Disco's been dead for 3 years. But I agree with everything you said. This was like, Cheatham, what a surprise, man. I never even heard of the guy. And now we're like his biggest fans. I think the guy's great. I've never seen that spot before. It's a dangerous spot. That's dangerous. It takes a lot of you're going over with nothing except your ankles and those ropes, and it was something. But fucking Mike, here's how green he is. While he's tied up, and you got what's his face, David Manning is trying to get him loose, which was actually fun watching little skinny David Manning trying to pry the ropes apart with his foot. You know, so good on Manning. And Mike doesn't know what to do and forgets he's the fucking baby face and keeps running over and kicking Cheatham while he's down and keeps doing it and keeps having to be warned by the referee. It's like, Mike, I think maybe he's just, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do something. I don't know what to do now. Because he probably didn't see that fucking bump coming.
No way. Yeah. And he didn't have the heel in his ear telling him what to do.
Kick me. I mean, because I'm like, he's kicking. I'm like, that's a heel move, kicking a guy when he's down. Or for a jobber guy, you know, it is different. Like if it was Rick Rude and Jake the Snake was kicking him, that'd be they're different.
Yeah, it was a feud. It was a blood feud or something. Yeah, it would be fine.
Then it'd be fine for the baby face to do that. But here it just he just looks like an asshole. But this might be my favorite Mike Von Erich match.
Yeah, I'm with you, brother. I can't think of any. I mean, maybe some. There might be a handful more. We'll go through a few, I'm sure, eventually. But this is up there. And there's not a knock at you, Kelly, because I know you're Mr. Jobber. But Johnny and I grew up on these fucking job matches. And you might get 2 or 3 a year that's at this type of level. And I'm being kind by saying 2 or 3 a year. And he usually involved Ric Flair and George South or Rick for one of these, like the guys deciding or Tully deciding to have a great match, you know, the heel jobber. It just doesn't happen. Or am I right, John?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking for me, it'd be like for the Tully having a good match with Pat Tanaka on Worldwide and go, where the fuck did that come from?
Exactly. Or like, I remember Brian Adidas, his greatest match was against Tully Blanchard. Kelly, but I know you watch a lot of I mean, you're the king of watching WWE 80s squash matches. I mean, this shit doesn't happen. Am I right?
Yeah, no. I mean, it was different in New York, where it was usually a seasoned vet going against a job guy. So the job guy didn't have to do anything like Ron Cheatham. And I double checked Ron Cheatham. He had one more match in the territory against Jose Lothario at a Fort Worth show that was taped and we're actually going to look at. But that match, I can't find that match on YouTube.
Oh, shit.
May be in the collection of Pete Schumacher.
I don't think so. I am 99.9% sure it's not.
Okay, that is okay. Yeah. Listeners, world castaways, if you will, that is your mission. That is our new holy grail, because I've never heard of Cheatham before, and now I love him. A chance to see him in there bumping around for fucking Jose Lothario. Holy shit. Me. Wow.
Yeah.
Fudge me.
And then, after that one random match in 1986 UWF, and that's it. So it seems like he just dropped off the face of the earth for some reason.
Yeah, Fritz should have given him like an extra hundo to make his son look so damn good here. Right? He earned himself like a spot in Devastation Incorporated. he could have fit in. He could have fit in with those misfits.
Well, he's clearly better than a lot of majorly pushed guys we've seen on this show.
with looks, he's not. I mean, you can understand. Like, oh, he's a good looking guy. I understand why he's getting the push. Cheatham is like a perfectly. He looks like a heel. Walks, he's the duck.
He looks like Dennis Franz, kind of, but maybe a little bit more in shape. He would have fit in great in Memphis, bumping around like that with that look. If guys like Phil Hickerson could be stars in Memphis, then Don Cheatham definitely could.
Yeah, I was super impressed. Ooh. Color me impressed, Mr. Cheatham. Next up, Jimmy Garvin versus the stripper that would be known as Chief White Cloud.
Oh, boy.
Kelly, do you have anything on Chief White Cloud?
No. Stripper? Why was he a stripper?
He looked like a stripper.
Those damn
briefs. Oh, looked like a stripper.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you had some.
Nice little athletic body. And he was like 5'5", maybe. 5'7". he was smaller than Precious. And, and he just screamed stripper Indian, like the one you do the YMCA, one of them is stripper Indian.
Okay. Right. I thought you had some info on his like post wrestling choice of employment.
He looks like he felt like a male stripper to me. You get that vibe. Only missing was the body oil. And maybe the dog in his trunks, but we don't know what happened behind those doors. Yeah. Jimmy Garvin, Chief White Cloud. What are you thinking here, Kelly?
Well, first up with Chief Billy White Cloud. Yeah, he had a long career, actually. He was, of Mexican descent. I think it's not racist to say it's obvious that he looked.
I looked it up. I had to look it up because when I saw him, I went
Italian.
I, Yeah, exactly. I have seen some Italians pretend to be Native Americans in wrestling, but this guy takes the cake. I thought he looks like one of Travolta's crew in Saturday Night Fever, but but I looked it up, and yes, he is. He's of Mexican descent.
Oh wow! Okay, I did not look it up, and I thought for sure he was a little gangster. Okay.
Oh, I thought he was a total guinea, and I'm allowed to say that I'm one. So I was like, this is one of my people.
We're discussing the 80s. It doesn't matter if you are in one or not. Okay. I'll get with me, buddy.
Hey, that's my people. I'm proud. We have a proud, my people have a proud history of pretending to be Native Americans in wrestling.
So he wrestled as Pedro Colombo for a long time. Yeah. Tri-state, Florida, LA, South, all the Southern territories. But he'd been working as White Claw since 1974, so he'd been doing it for a decade at this point. And it was in San Francisco where he started.
I looked at pictures, Kelly, online, and there was a guy who you're the bio thought. I thought they were totally two different people.
I mean, that's totally possible because that often happens.
Okay, because there wasn't Chief White Claw in the pictures I saw. He didn't have the body, the figure he had now. And I can't imagine if he didn't have it, he was like an older gentleman that's who I thought. And I thought this was like some new guy who was Italian.
Well, I saw some of those pictures as well, Pete. And there's definitely something to the theory of there being more than one Chief White Cloud to the history of wrestling. Because the actual Chief White Cloud was a very famous Native American chief. And that sounds like something that's been passed down since the 50s. Yeah, okay. No, Chief White Cloud. Because I saw a picture that looked like it was like from the 50s. It was a big stout barrel-chested guy. And then I kept looking and I saw pictures of the guy who I thought was Italian. So it's definitely been a shared name.
Yeah, because this guy you can call Chief Strip Cloud. So
well, in wrestling data, they usually are often confuse wrestlers that had the same name and lump them all together as one wrestler. So. Right. That's very possible.
Yeah,
but it seemed like
it looked like he'd be around in 1974.
I was going to say he seemed very experienced. Like he didn't seem like he was a rookie or anything like that. He seemed to know what he was doing. Anyway, so I'll go back to these details. I'm not sure if it's the same person, but I think it is because this guy had a run in Dallas. Held the Texas tag titles with Raul Mata 81. And Mata was a guy we saw in the early days of watching these shows. And White Cloud was also in the Dying Days of LA. And yeah, his last territory. This is his, this looks to be his last territory. So yeah, he's done by spring 84. And to the match, like I said, he looks athletic, charismatic. But yeah, he's pretty short, so he's not going to be seriously pushed in this era. That was a big drawback for a lot of guys. Gets in a lot of offense on Garvin. This is, of course, still a crowd that wants Sunshine, and we get the huge "We Want Sunshine" chant again. Big war dance comeback for White Cloud. And I made the note that Chief J did it way better. So, yeah, that's my opinion of Billy White Cloud as far as war dances go.
Somewhere in London, Parv is feeling a disturbance in the force.
Yeah. I know. That's almost why I wrote that down, why I made that comment. And then let's see what we have. Precious interferes. And Bronco DQs Garvin. So, yeah, White Claw doesn't even do the job here. He actually wins by DQ. And this gets more heat on Precious going forward. So, yeah, I thought this was a fine match to just continue the heat on Garvin and Precious and the feud with Sunshine and all that stuff.
Yeah, but this may know. I mean, why would you have Garvin lose by DQ to this guy who's not a regular in the territory? Made no sense whatsoever. He seemed more interested in working with Precious than he did with Garvin. I thought Garvin's charisma was off the charts to start the match. He just screams, but it just felt really weird because it felt like Chief was like doing his own angle with Sunshine, and then we get into this DQ finish with your one of your top heels in the company versus some guy who's not even hanging around. I can understand maybe going with that route to give a new face who's going to be with the company for a while the rub. But God, yeah, this is just, I don't know, I didn't think they had that much chemistry with each other either. What about you, John? Where do you fall on this match?
Well, first of all, at the end of the Cheat and Von Erich match, when Bill Mercer says what's coming up next, he says, "We'll be back with Chief Whitehead and gorgeous Jimmy Garvin."
Of course.
Whitehead. Oh, man, I laughed so hard. My best friend's last name was Whitehead when I was a little kid. And then the Chiron, of course, because it's the time. Chief White Cloud wants Garvin's scalp. I'm like, he can't even reach his scalp. He'd need a step stool to even reach his scalp. He's a tiny, tiny muscular man. And yeah, and at the end, he's like, you know, Precious is in his face, and he's doing the whole, like, oh, I'm going to hit her. And he's like, oh, if Chief White Cloud had his fire water, he would have knocked her in the next week. He sucks. I mean, he's smooth. You can tell he'd been around a bit, but I thought, you know, that gorgeous Jimmy Garvin was giving this guy this much fucking offense. And I was like, what the fuck's happening? And then a DQ finish? Like, what's happening here with this job guy? He can't possibly be sticking around or be a star of any stripe. I've never heard of him.
Yeah.
No, I think there must have been plans at this point in time for something beyond just job duty, but it didn't last long.
Yeah, well, that idea went out the window pretty quick. Then we get the main event is, and you know, I'm a big fan of these type of main events where you have the six-man, and it's in like umbrella telling, storytelling, where you have Carrie, who's kind of has something going on with Missing Link. You have the Super D's, and the Ice has something going on with them. Oh, Chris Adams gets joined, and, you know, he has some connected to Jimmy Garvin feud outside it. So this is kind of, you know, getting developing at all. It's a nice little umbrella storytelling. It's a nice umbrella story match. What do you think of it, Kelly?
Let me consult my notes on my thoughts. Okay, so we had a big shine by Carrie to start, and he took out all three men. Iceman's in, he gets a good shine too. This is, yeah, very typical, where all the baby faces take their turn and then get to shine pretty good. And then the heels finally get heat on Chris Adams. And, oh, on the Super D's tights, you have Super D, but the D is too close to the R, so it's just supered.
Yeah.
yeah, they didn't plan that.
Yeah, isn't like Super Destroyers, isn't that just such a more dangerous-sounding tag team than the Super D's?
Well, totally. Yeah, we talked about this when the Super D's came in. We wondered why they had this nickname right away, like from their first match in. It's weird. The
first was too lazy to say Destroyer.
I don't know.
They can't fit
I don't know what to do.
They can't fit Super Destroyer on the tights. That's why it says Super.
Too many letters to the cost too much.
They could fit it on the cape. I mean, they could fit it on the cape, to be honest. I mean,
there you go.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I'd like to hear someone from the time explain the thinking behind the Super D's name. Let's see. Iceman reverses and pins one of the Super D's for the win. So there was chaos post-match. Iceman and Adams get roughed up. I thought it was a good match, but there wasn't a lot to it. It's kind of short. The main events lately have been kind of, I mean, they've had great angles come out of the main events, but the matches themselves have been getting shorter and shorter. And I think I was reading a bit earlier today about the history of the TV and the production and how they were changing things and wanting it to appeal to a more mainstream audience. And I think shortening the matches was one of the edicts, and maybe we're seeing some of that right now. with suddenly it seems in the last couple of months, the main events and most of the matches have been quite short compared to
what you brought up there, Kelly, because I mean, this television program, World Class, is totally not formula for the normal 80s. What do you think, Johnny? This is not the normal type of television that most territories ran in the 80s. Am I correct?
No.
A lot more interview heavy, a lot more squash heavy, correct?
Yeah. Thus far, this has been one of those, hey, almost every match you get is a so-called winner's match. Me and Joey used to call them winner's matches and loser's matches. And like Saturday morning is full of loser matches. And this wasn't. It was one of the few. Like Mid-South wasn't either. You know, they really had a lot of main event shit going on their TV. But for the most part, no, it wasn't like this. But Kelly, I didn't know, what was this edict that you're mentioning?
Just that the producers thought shorter matches were more appealing to non, you know, hardcore wrestling fans. People who were just there drawn in by the Von Erichs and the Freebirds and the music videos and the rock vibe and all that.
That makes sense. Younger crowd.
Yeah, so I think that's why it's changed. And I think that maybe answers the question why we get the encore matches, because the matches are the sportatorium matches are shorter now, so they needed extra matches maybe to fill out the whole show. I don't know.
Which you think most first promotions would be more interview heavy, but this is a promotion when you think about it. The lead babyfaces.
Yeah, nobody can talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have the speakers can talk, and Jimmy Garvin that can talk, but you can't just have your your heels just outshine your babyfaces on the stick the whole entire show either.
Yeah, so instead of, we'll get to that next show. Boy, will we. What happens when they give them mic time? Wow.
Yeah. One brother was doing a lot of cleaning up, let's put it that way. But hey, are you done on this one, Kelly? Or
Let me see. Da-da-da-da. Yeah, I'm done. Yeah.
You know, I enjoyed it for what it was. Here, I thought Missing Link came across as the biggest star on the heel side. I thought he bumped really big. He made the match about himself, which is, selfish as it is, good for him, because he had a lot of upside here. He's new, a fresh character. And honestly, for me, when I think of the Devastation Inc., I always think of Missing Link, Kamala, and the Super Ds, and maybe Killer Khan are the guys, that I most associate with Devastation Incorporated. We got a fun shine for the faces early on. I loved Ice's headlock takeover here. I thought it was really fun, really, really kind of like a wow type of factor. I thought Adams and Link had some good, great interactions. Link really again felt like he was almost like a out of control Ivan Koloff in trying to shine up and bump for all the faces. That's the biggest compliment I can give to that heel. Heat on Adams, good heel heat on Adams. I love the setup for the hot tag, and Ice is running wild. Good cross up on the finish. I enjoyed this. I give it like 2 3/4. Really fun. It was short, about 9 minutes, but it was all action, all go. And kind of what Kelly, what you're kind of saying is this was like the prototype of what they were trying to accomplish. And it worked for me. Before I go to you, Johnny, when you think of Devastation Inc., Kelly, who do you think of?
Kamala. Boris Zirkoff, Mr. Ebony. Yeah, that's who I think of when I think of Devastation Incorporated. No. I said Kamala first and foremost, and then Link, I guess, and Abdul the Butcher's in it later, right?
No.
Oh, okay.
Gary Hart
and Abby, right? Okay. Well, who am I missing? Who are the obvious guys I'm missing?
Super D's, Killer Khan.
Killer Khan, right? I think that's who I was thinking of, not Abby. Super D's. Well, yeah, just because they're here now. Yeah, I was thinking of like.
But they were there. They had a good.
Because Devastation run. Incorporated goes on. Yeah, but Devastation Incorporated goes on for several more years.
Right. But those are, I'm just saying, who do you think of when you first think of Devastation Inc.? I mean, usually four names, like those four came to mind along with Khan. What about you, Kelly? I mean, John, when you think of Devastation Inc., who do you think?
You're giving me the Mount Rushmore of Devastation Incorporated?
Oh, yeah, well, baby.
Okay, Akbar, Missing right. Link, Kamala, and Killer Khan.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Akbar, of course. What do you think of the match, though, then, John?
It was fun. I love the Link. You know, I sound like Odo on Deep Space Nine. That's the geekiest joke anyone will hear all week, by the way. But the way he bumps around is so unique. As I mentioned this last show, Dewey Robertson had been around forever and was a journeyman, and he's got this new character, and he's throwing himself into it by bumping uniquely. It's all he does is get bumped around.
And when you think about it, John and Kelly, right now we're seeing him developing the character, right?
Yeah.
Probably 4 years from now, he ain't doing all this bumping around. And
no.
Right now, he's hungry.
Yeah.
Eventually, he'll be over and won't have to do as much. And it's funny when you see that.
Oh, yeah. If he gets during his brief stint in WWF, you know, there's a lot of like, shit, I don't have to do shit now, right?
Yeah.
here, you're right. But he's just bumping around. Even the way... There's one spot, it's hard to describe, but I'm going to try, where he bumps to his corner and then kind of like pops up from the bump and throws his hand out for the tag with this dazed look on his green face that's almost ballet and in its performance. It was, and then they immediately got the tag. It was awesome. It was the tiniest little thing, but I was like, damn, that was slick, that slick spot. And in the crowd, we had three little kids in T-shirts, white T-shirts with red trim and letters. One said, "I heart Chris Adams." The one next said, "I heart Kevin Von Erich." And the other one said, "I heart Kerry Von Erich." It was kind of adorable. They went to the mall and had those made. And they three little girls had to decide who got who.
Like, that is cute. I mean, Johnny, you're in there. So was I, of getting our own shirts printed up, you know?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. I had some T-shirts that I'd go down to especially if you live down the Jersey Shore, you know, down the boardwalk. That was like something to do on vacation. Oh, yeah. We'll get a T-shirt made at the iron-on place.
Or you get an iron-on, you know?
Yeah, I had iron-ons. Or an iron-on, exactly. An iron-on T-shirt. That should make a comeback when COVID-19 is
over. It really should.
Boy, do they, it's just all the baby faces is beating the shit out of the heels. That's all it is. It's like the Von Erich shine influence. Everyone's got it now because the heels ain't getting shit. Even the cheating at the end backfires on the heels and they still fucking lose. The spot where Akbar goes to cheat, well, that's where the heel, you think the heels have gotten beat up this entire match. Here's the cheating part where they'll get the win and ha 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 dastardly and they still lose.
Yeah, I can see that, but I thought it worked because it was different.
But then
usually it works. It was the Freebirds.
Yeah, but at one point Bill Mercer, I swear I heard it twice, I swear he called the turnbuckle the cornbuckle. I thought I heard it, the cornbuckle.
I probably. Yeah.
It wasn't turnbuckle. He said something, but it sounded an awful lot like cornbuckle. And then the heels after the match get their heat back for exactly 7 seconds before Kerry Von Erich kicks everyone's ass again. And then the heels are on the outside and one of the Super D's, I think it's Wild Bill, he's going, ha, 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 look at him. We got him. We got him. We sure got him this time. Like, Vince, you didn't get anything. Nothing. And I enjoyed the match, but boy, this was all the good guys beating up the bad guys the entire fucking match. There was no Ricky Morton sequence in this shit.
I thought Adam sold pretty well.
Yeah, for a little while.
What do you think of the interviews, John?
Oh, yeah. Well, so this ends with each of the baby faces gets an interview. So let's start with Kerry, because I think you want to start strong. He's like, that's a very big win for you, isn't it, Kerry? Like, yeah, it's a big win. He was like, his voice was cracking like he's Peter Brady.
Well, what's even, I thought it was funnier, was it felt like they had him pecking the pecking order on who was the better promo.
It did.
Put him in order.
Yeah, exactly. Let's start with the worst and end with the best. And he's like, yeah, it's a very big win. And we're all excited, Bill. We're very excited. But I want my fucking money, Akbar. Or I'll take it out on your head, Akbar. He's obsessed with his money. You fucked me out of 10 grand. I've never seen Kerry angry like this. Apparently money is what does it. Then Adams is like, Chris Adams, he really doesn't want anything to do with this shit, because his promo is basically, yeah, it was good. It was great to help out my mates here, but I mean, I'm always happy to help out. But to be honest with you, I'm kind of focused on Jimmy Garvin, so they could just handle their own shit from now on. I thought it was great. And then we get Iceman.
No, there was Sunshine.
Oh, Sunshine. Yeah, she just basically says, all I can remember she said for the couple seconds they gave her is like, you know, wanting to get her hands on Precious. And she looks right at the screen and she goes, I want it bad. And I was like, ooh, Kelly just got a stiffy.
You know me well.
I knew, my friend.
And I thought then, it was late getting on the thing today.
Yes, it was, actually.
So then Iceman, he's pointing at his burned face, like, you thought this was pain, sucker? You know, Akbar, I'm dogging you? Because apparently something's coming up where he's going to be able to get Akbar for 5 minutes. This is the first we've heard of it.
What's funny is, I mean, that's like the same stiff. I mean, Sunshine gets Precious.
Yeah.
Fuck, guys.
Yeah.
Come up with something original.
I didn't even think of that. That's hilarious. And he goes, I'm dogging you, Akbar. You know, 5 minutes. You know, I'm going to kick your ass. And that's the gospel. And I was like, fuck yeah, man. Iceman, like I said, Iceman can fucking talk.
Yeah. You know? So I remember I was going to do a show just out of Houston when if Judd Duggan beat Kamala, he's going to get 5 minutes with Akbar. By God, my brother and I were there. and Akbar, and then Kamala no-showed. So it was just Duggan got Akbar all of himself. It was great.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, no, I remember that
even
story.
Even better.
What do you think about I don't think I mean, this is clearly, I thought Iceman was the best promo. Other thing had the most charisma. Sunshine was very good, don't get me wrong. But I thought Ice was the best. I thought it was ridiculous that they both had the 5 minutes stiff and they both mention it within seconds of each other. It's ridiculous. What about you, Kelly? What do you think of all this?
Yeah, that's the main note I made, is that they're working too. Winner gets 5 minutes with somebody gimmicks at the same time. But yeah, I mean, that's one of the, when you think of like Southern wrestling tropes, that's definitely one of the ones, the 5 minute gimmick that, you know, you never saw that in the WWF. You never saw that up north. Vince would never do a winner gets 5 minutes with the manager ever, I don't think. So yeah, that's my only note.
Well, man, on that note, I look at the show. I mean, I thought it was a thumbs in the middle, maybe leaning upwards. I you love to cheat them, and I thought the main event was solid. I mean, the Garvin finish was just baffling to me. The 5 minute stips was like eye rolling to me, dumb. I'm probably gonna go thumbs in the middle, probably. Well, what about you, John? What do you think about the show?
I thought it was okay. I had fun. I got to watch the missing link bounce around like a maniac, and Kerry Von Erich try to struggle through promos. That's two of my favorite things about World Class. So I'll give it a thumbs up.
How about you, Kelly? What are you thinking, brother?
Yeah, it was middle, I guess. Yeah, had the reruns at the beginning. Cheatham was really good, and yeah, it wasn't much else. It's funny because they're running a big show 2 days later. in Fort Worth, like basically a Star Wars card or a Star Wars worthy card. I don't think it was billed as a Star Wars. But yeah, you wouldn't know it. Yeah, you wouldn't know it based on this show. But that just shows they weren't drawing the same or drawing from the same audience, really, I guess. I don't know, because this show did not make you want to run out and buy tickets to a major card after it was over.
Is it possible they had excerpts that didn't make the WWE Network that they inserted for the live?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've talked about that before, probably.
On this, I've been watching. I haven't seen them promoting a show, really, a house show, a spot show, anything whatsoever.
No, because no. This is what's meant to be sent out on that satellite, on that Christian network that people are watching in Israel. Yeah. And they don't give a shit about going to Fort Worth that Saturday. That stuff is inserted in, or they send out exactly. This is Vince's Superstars of Wrestling technique.
Yeah.
A syndicated show that anyone can watch anywhere, that everything else is plugged in.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, man, Johnny, anything you'd like to plug?
Just real quick, once again, my new podcast with Travis, Gideon Guys, where we talk about DC's Legends of Tomorrow, is going great. We're going to be recording part 6, season 1, episode 6. Star City 2046 tomorrow afternoon. It should
that was
be
by far the best seasons episode of that year, I think.
Yeah, well, it's hard. It's real quick. It's rough getting. I have a fondness for this season, but season 1 of Legends of Tomorrow is an entertaining train wreck, to put it nicest. But yeah, this one's a lot of fun, and so we'll be recording that tomorrow. And I think we might be doing a Mystery Titans theater pretty soon. As well, mm-hmm. So look, keep an eye out for that.
Fantastic, Kelly. Anything you'd like to plug?
Just the feed, PWO Podcast Network. Tons of shows. You know, now it's just crazy. At least 10 a week, basically. We got non-wrestling shows now where we're selling out. But hey, they're all good in their own way.
So it's not selling out; it's buying in. PWO Network.
There you go.
Well, my plug is watch the final season of The Clone Wars on Disney Plus. The final 4 episodes tied in directly to Revenge of the Sith, where I know eventually somebody is going to do a fan edit and edit all the scenes into the movie. It was wickedly good. And I got to plug they're doing the Mandalorian season 2. Well, they're doing a behind the scenes show, roundtable discussion with a bunch of people. And Dave Filoni, who was one of the guys, one of the executive producers on the Mandalorian, and was the guy behind Clone Wars and Rebels. You just tell his passion for the last speech he does in episode 2. Where he's talking about the duel of fate with Maul versus Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan is incredible and one of the most interesting takes I've ever heard on relationships in Star Wars. If you have the network that if you have Disney Plus, I check them all out. Great stuff.
Kelly, Pete's been bought by Disney.
Yeah. Sure. Oh, good. Send some money our way.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, can you buy us? Yeah, I have it too. Hey, Mickey Mouse could fuck me right in my ass if give me some of that Mickey Mouse money.
Well, on that note, while Johnny takes it up the ass for me,
it's a mouse. How big could it be?
I'm sure he, you know, probably taking his stuff.
You know? I do pest control. I see them up close.
There you go, man. Johnny's his mice fetish. Everyone, have a great week. Stay safe. We're all in this together. Have a great one. Bye-bye.
My heartaches and troubles are just up and gone. The moment that you come in view. hand in mine, dear, I could dance on and on, and I could waltz across Texas with you. Waltz across Texas with you in my arms. Waltz across Texas with you. A storybook ending, I'm lost in your charms, and I could waltz across Texas with you.